You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
In 2009, Opinion Business Research conducted a survey on Iraqi casualties since the 2003 U.S. invasion. The respected research firm estimated that over 1 million Iraqis had been killed. The number is not out of line with previous estimates. What is certain is that the invasion, advertised as a project to bring freedom, has brought chaos and insecurity. Although the U.S. presence has been reduced to less than 50,000 troops, concerns around Iraq's stability remain. To talk more about the situation in Iraq, we're joined from Washington, D.C. by Raed Jarar. He is an Iraqi-American blogger and political analyst. He has recently returned from Iraq, the country where he was born and raised. Hello, Raed.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for joining us. Now, when was the last time that you were in Iraq?
I came back 3 weeks ago. I stayed for a month and a half in Iraq this last visit. Most of it was in the Kurdistan region in Erbil. But I also went to Baghdad for the first time since 2003. I left Baghdad after the U.S. invasion. And this was my first trip back to Baghdad.
Uh-huh. And what did you find when you went back home? How was it different?
It was an extremely hard trip for me because it was just very hard to see the level of devastation, both to the city. I could not recognize many of the neighborhoods that I grew up in or went to school in, mostly because of the level of destruction and because of the concrete walls that they have built almost around all the streets of Baghdad. You can't really tell where you are because of the concrete walls around the streets. But what was more painful to me is that this is the city that I was born in. You know, I went to my undergrad there, and I had all of my cousins, my aunts and uncles, my co-workers and colleagues living there. And this time I went back and I was a complete stranger because I did not know a single person in the city. You know, believe it or not, when I look at the statistics of how many Iraqis fled Iraq in the last 8 years. There were 5 million displaced people, half of them internally and the other half left the country. But that did not hit home. I couldn't really feel what that means, 5 million people being displaced, until I actually went to Baghdad and discovered that every single person who I know had fled the city.
Wow. So how has that changed life in the city?
It's a completely different place, you know. It's not the same Baghdad that I left. The services in the city are non-existent. There isn't real feeling that the government is providing services. There is no electricity and no water and no sewage and no education and no healthcare. We're talking about 8 years of U.S. Occupation and another 12 or 13 years of U.S. bombardment and sanctions. So it's been a long time of devastation. But believe it or not, the few days that I spent in Baghdad, I was there for a week or so. The temperature was more than 50 or 55 centigrade. And people did not have electricity. It felt like walking in an oven or something. You know, it was extremely hot. It was very dusty. The Baghdad did not used to get this much dust before 2003. Now, because all the rivers river levels went down, all of the green belt projects collapsed and died around the city. It gets these sandstorms sometimes twice a week. So it's just a disaster, you know, the level of destruction that I have seen in the few days that I spent in Baghdad. It confirmed my feeling and my readings about the situation, that Iraqis will need decades to fix what the U.S. has done to their country. Decades, not years. Iraqis will be very lucky if they manage to just reach to a place where the country is, able to start reconstruction, maybe in 2020. You know, it's that bad. We can't start the reconstruction process, I think, for another decade. So the situation is very dire, and I think the longer the U.S. stays, the worse it will get. The only way to put Iraq on the right path, the right track, is to for the U.S. to get out of Iraq completely, without leaving a single soldier, without leaving a single base, without leaving a single security contractor, a mercenary. That's the only way out, because other than that, we'll just be going in this the same cycle of death and destruction and corruption and displacement.
What is the current situation in terms of the government in relation to its people and also the U.S.? How are things moving in terms of the government more representing Iraqis? Is that anything of a reality at all?
No, actually, unfortunately, is not. I was one of the people who voted in the first Iraqi election, because I thought that the parliament, at least the Iraqi legislative branch, might be more representative of what the Iraqi people want. And it is, generally speaking, when we compare the Iraqi parliament, which is the only elected entity in the Iraqi government, it is closer to the public than the Iraqi executive branch, that does not get elected by the public. It gets assigned by political deals inside the parliament. But both of them are really disconnected. You can't believe the level of disconnection. They live in a different universe. The green zone, the so-called green zone, it's a different country than the red zone outside it. And these people who live in the green zone, they have different standards for living, for security, for salaries. Let me give you two examples. One of the people who I met during my last trip was an IT technician. He works with the web team of Babylon University, a university in Hilla, in the south of Baghdad. And his salary was $80 a month, $80 a month. And he thought it's not very good, you know. He wants the government to increase his salary. On the other hand, a member of parliament in Iraq receives $22,000 a month. I mean, do you see the gap between like around $100 and more than $20,000 a month? This is a representative of the public. Of course, you know, this is not the full amount that members of parliament or ministers receive, because they get more money spent on them because they live for free in the hotels in the green zone. They have, you know, they use other government facilities. The gap is unbelievable between the income of the, you know, few thousand people who work who run this new regime in Iraq and the public. You know, I haven't seen a single person in Iraq who receives a fraction of the $22,000 a month. I mean, believe it or not, Iraqi parliamentarians and ministers receive more salaries than U.S. senators and Congress members. And this is, does not make any sense, because the life expenses in the U.S. are way higher than Iraq, of course, and all the other obvious reasons. The other thing is that getting in and out of the green zone is extremely complicated. There are, you know, very huge security checkpoints and very complicated procedures of going in and being searched and having a reason for going in and contacts. And so, you know, like, it's just amazing to me that no one in Iraq can meet with their members of parliament, and no one in Iraq knows or has access to any way to contact their members of parliament or any other government officials. You know, if you go to their website, they don't have their contact information out. They don't have their email addresses or phone numbers public. I mean, just imagine the level of disconnect between the public that is living with no electricity and with daily explosions and assassinations and with all of the war zone that's going outside there, and then with these members of the parliament and the ministers who live inside the green zone, go around with 20 or 25 personal security guards in armored vehicles and make, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 a month. This is the legal salary. God knows how much money they can get from corruption as well.
There's been more violence or an increase in violence again recently in Iraq, and now there's talk of the United States extending its occupation. What are your thoughts on that? Do the Iraqis need the U.S. to save them from further violence, as the argument is often made? I mean, you mentioned no earlier, but maybe you could expand on that.
Definitely not. I don't think that the U.S. is a protector of the Iraqis. I don't think that the United States' foreign military occupation and intervention in Iraq is saving Iraqis from themselves. Now, this is the narrative that the mainstream politicians and mainstream media in the U.S. Tries to repeat over and over that, you know, we're there civilizing Iraqis, building them a nation, and protecting the different factions from each other. This is not a narrative that is believed in Iraq at all. I don't think Iraqis buy this story. They never did, and they don't know, and I don't think they will never do in the future. Because from an Iraqi perspective, the U.S. presence is a foreign intervention that has been all along a part of the problem, not a part of the solution. You know, Iraqis don't think that the U.S. has been protecting them from each other. Iraqis think that the U.S. has been creating a worse environment that actually increases Iraqi divisions. It makes it harder for Iraqis to work together or to live together. And it makes it harder for Iraqis to have a legitimate government, a legitimate armed force. And I think this is extremely important to think about. Just think about the main reason why the Iraqi public don't see their government or armed forces as legitimate. It's because this government and armed forces are seen as puppets of a foreign occupation, of a foreign power. So the crisis that the Iraqi armed forces is facing is not a crisis of training. It's not that they want an American to go 10,000 miles away and teach them how to carry a gun or load their you know, cannon or whatever. It's a crisis of legitimacy. It's a crisis of legitimacy that these armed forces are not loyal to Iraq. They are not protecting Iraq's sovereignty. And this crisis of legitimacy will not be solved by foreign invaders and occupiers. That's why I'm saying, you know, it takes me back to the original point that I was making, which is the only way the U.S. can actually help Iraqis is to get out of their way. That's the only way, is to just get out of their way. Let them deal with all of these disasters that were created in the last two decades, because the U.S. is not a part of the solution. Even if there were good intentions to actually build Iraq and stabilize it, which I personally doubt that there are these intentions, but even if there were good intentions, I don't think the U.S. has the capacity or the moral legitimacy to actually build Iraq and stabilize it and teach Iraqis democracy and make Iraqis reconcile. And we have tried that for all of these years. It failed miserably. So that's why I think, to answer your question, the answer is absolutely not. The U.S. cannot help Iraqis by prolonging its occupation. It cannot help Iraqis by prolonging the military intervention. The only way to help them is to actually end this intervention, not to change it to other ways or find other ways to occupy Iraq.
There's also, of course, Iraq is in the Middle East, and there's a lot going on there right now. Can you put it in a little bit of context in terms of how are Iraqis responding to what's going on in the larger Middle East right now in terms of the Arab spring and the various uprisings?
It's very disappointing because, unfortunately, at a time that the entire Arab world is erupting in demonstrations and revolutions against their dictators, Iraqis were not given the chance to do the job by themselves. I wish that Saddam Hussein and the former Iraq government was changed or improved by Iraqis. And I always believed, and I will always believe, that Iraqis would have been capable of changing that regime, the same way that Egyptians managed to change the Hosni Mubarak regime. It was way harder to change the Hosni Mubarak regime than changing the Saddam Hussein regime. We shouldn't forget that Hosni Mubarak was protected and supported by the U.S. and Israeli government. And Saddam Hussein did not have that many foreign powers supporting him all along. So it's very sad to see that these events are happening now. And Iraq, instead of fighting to get their freedoms from a dictator, they ended up now a destroyed, broken nation. It seems that the public does not really have that much appetite for more demonstrations and more fights, and it makes me feel really sad and disappointed. There are some plans to hold demonstrations in Iraq on September 9th. I'm a little bit skeptical on the capability and ability of the Iraqi grassroots organizers to bring out millions of Iraqis to the streets, because unfortunately the country is stuck in a quagmire of partisanship and sectarian politics. But let's see how it goes. September 9th will be a test to see if Iraqis will manage to go to the streets and have an uprising against the U.S. Presence and the U.S. Supported regime in their country that brought them nothing else than death and destruction and misery.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining me today, Raed.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been speaking with Raed Jarar. He is an Iraqi American blogger and political analyst based in Washington, D.C.